Jason Warner Smith. I'm an actor. I was in Baton Rouge on Monday working on a Civil War era picture, and my character was having a gun put to the back of their head and the trigger pulled. The armorer who handles all of the weapons on the picture was extremely careful and showed me the gun and how it was loaded with fake bullets and pulled the trigger 6, 7, 8 times in a row to show me that everything was fake. And that happened every single time that the gun went from one person to the other before we would shoot the scene. When I heard what happened to Alec Baldwin, I knew that somebody had made a mistake that normally would never be made. I don't know why, but it does concern me.
We're learning more about the shooting death of cinematographer Hylena Hutchins. Hutchins was accidentally shot and killed by actor Alec Baldwin late last week while filming the Western drama Rust. Reports from the weekend indicate Baldwin was told the weapon was cold or unloaded moments before he pulled the trigger. The accident comes in the wake of calls for better working conditions from IATSE, the union that oversees most film and television crew members. IATSE has been arguing that America's film sets are unsafe since before the shooting. IATSE has been arguing that America's film sets are unsafe since before the shooting. The union even threatened to go on strike over the issue and shut down film and TV sets nationwide. They came to a resolution, but many members are still unsatisfied. We'll take a deep dive into the state of America's film sets after the break. You're listening to the 1A Podcast. I'm Jonathan Hill, sitting in for Jen White. Remember, to join future conversations, download our 1A Vox Pop app and leave us a voicemail.
This message comes from Capital One. With the Capital One Venture Card, you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. And you can use those miles toward travel expenses like flights, hotels, rental cars, and more. Just book and pay for your travel using your Venture Card and redeem your miles toward the cost. Capital One. What's in your wallet? Credit approval required. Capital One Bank, USANA.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Wyzant. Need a smarter way to learn anything? Wyzant is the nation's biggest network of professional tutors, connecting you with experts in more than 12,000 topics for personalized one-on-one lessons. On Wyzant, you choose how much to pay, who you work with, and when you meet, in person or online. NPR listeners can experience the difference personalized tutoring makes this back-to-school season by taking $25 off each of your first three lessons. Head to wyzant.com/NPR today to start learning.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're discussing safety on America's film sets. Here to tell us more is John Horn. He's an arts and entertainment host with KPCC in Southern California. John, it's always a pleasure.
My pleasure as well.
And Michael Tristano of Mike Tristano & Company, armorer and weapons rental for motion picture and television productions. Mike's worked for more than 25 years as an armorer on film sets around Los Angeles. And in fact, he joins us now from a film set in the California mountains. Mike, thanks so much for making the time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, John, there have been a lot of developments in this story just over the weekend. What more do we know about what happened last Thursday?
Well, first off, that the movie had lost some key crew members the morning of the shooting, and it appears now that might have led to the rest of the production team trying to rush with replacement staff, and they only had enough crew to operate one camera. And second, that the chain of custody of the gun in question might have some gaps. So according to a search warrant filed by the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Department, Reed Russell, who is a member of the Rust Camera Department, told investigators that he had, quote, much work to complete because of 6 members of the crew walking off the film in protest because they weren't being paid and housed near the set. And the director, who was also shot, said that the production was running behind schedule. And furthermore, the director and Russell Reed said that according to the warrant, the gun might have been left outside and unsupervised for a period of time. Souza, the director, told investigators the production left the filming location for lunch. And when they returned, Souza said he was not sure if the gun had been checked again to ensure it didn't have a live round. And Reed said that he left the set for 5 minutes after returning from lunch. And he wasn't sure the gun had been checked again. When he got back, the gun was in Baldwin's possession. And Reed said he wasn't sure if it had been checked again by anybody. And then, as you mentioned, the assistant director, Dave Halls, gave the gun to Baldwin. He yelled it was a cold gun, which meant it did not have a live round. As we know, that wasn't true. And finally, the gun went off during a rehearsal, not during a performance or a film scene, when Baldwin pulled the weapon out of a holster.
So, Mike, John gave us a lot of info there. There were walkouts and accidental misfires. And the gun was possibly left unsupervised. Help us understand the safety protocols that you have in place to ensure things like this don't happen.
Well, I mean, there's different ways every armorer does something. But the fact that a gun is ever left unattended is a big red flag to me. I mean, we never leave the guns, even if, I mean, me and my crew, when we're there, even if I walk away to meet with a director or, you know, work through a rehearsal, someone is always standing with the guns. The guns are never loaded until we go on set and until we're actually ready to film the scene. You know, during the rehearsals, it's not loaded. It's not loaded at any time until we're ready to actually film the shot. So there are a lot of red flags here about things. And I mean, our procedures that my crew and I do are very intensive. So, you know, there's no chance of anything ever happening with a gun on set. You know, we arrive with the guns. We lay out all the guns on a gun table with the blanks. And I stress only blanks. So everybody can see that the guns are empty. There's no questioning. You don't ever question that a gun's loaded and bring it on a set. So there's a lot of issues there. But once, you know, when the gun is open, it stays open and unloaded until I bring it onto the set, meet with the AD, watch the rehearsal, do all the tweaks to safety, show the actor what I'm going to load the gun with, and just load it, like I said again, you know, when the gun's ready to go hot for an actual filming of a shot. Mm-hmm. So with that system in place, it's kind of foolproof. And the blanks look very different than a real bullet would. So, and I let everybody watch me load the gun. So it's obviously blanks. And that makes it pretty foolproof. I don't know what went wrong on this set. There's obviously a breakdown of a chain of people there.
Mike, could you clarify something for those of us who aren't part of the business? There's lots of talk about blanks and live ammunition and something being live versus cold. What is the difference between live ammunition and blanks, especially since live is an industry term that means loaded with material, and that material could be blanks? Break down those definitions for us. What's the difference there?
Sure. Well, whenever I hear live ammunition, to me, that means real bullets. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's never on a movie set. Blanks are what we use to simulate gunfire. And there's different types of blanks, like something on like this film, it being a Western, we use black powder blanks. And there's different size loads of black powder blanks and, you know, different size loads of any blank. So there's a quarter load, half load, and a full load. Quarter loads are something we generally use around horses and livestock on a Western because it's a low-level load in terms of sound and flash, so not to panic the animals, especially if we have people on horseback. Mm-hmm. Those are the main two types of things. And there's never live ammo, what we call live ammunition, which to me means something you would use going to a target range to shoot targets with or, you know, go hunting with or whatever. It's not anything that ever should be on a movie set. Mm-hmm. The only thing that should be on a set should be blanks and dummy rounds. Now, dummy rounds are rounds that look like bullets, but they're not live at all. They're used basically when you're seeing an actor or an actress load a gun on camera. And the camera pans in and you see the bullets. But those aren't live in any way. They're not blanks. They're not live ammunition. They're specifically a prop. And that's something we also check. Mm-hmm. Because, like, when you're doing a Western, you've got to see that there are bullets in the guns because they're revolvers or, you know, whatever type of weapon is being used, you're going to be able to see a bullet in it usually, unless it's a closed chamber weapon.
John, in the case of Russ, the gun did go through both the armorer and the AD, or the assistant director, but what do we know about this set specifically? You got into it a little bit, but why does it seem like so many protocols either failed or just weren't implemented to begin with?
Well, I think there are a couple possible explanations. One is because you had this walkout from the camera department, who were unhappy with working conditions, they were hurrying. And the director has said as much, that they were behind schedule. So if you're hurrying, does that mean you're not taking, you're not slowing down, you're rushing through things, you're not following the safety protocols that should be in place? And, you know, this, even though this is an Alec Baldwin film, it was not a high budget movie. I think they had, only several weeks of shooting. They're trying to make their days, get all the shots they needed. And even the morning in question, they started late because they didn't have a camera crew ready. So I think that's a possible issue. And the other thing, I just want to echo what the armor just said. I know a prominent writer and director who's worked on several Westerns, and he didn't want me to use his name because of the tragedy, but he shared with me a detailed summary of the gun safety protocols he uses. And so he says this: why are three unattended prop guns sitting outside on a cart? Guns are always locked up or in the possession of the prop master, assistant prop master, or the armor, depending on what's happening. Second, before a prop gun is fired or even held by an actor, it's open to show that it's either empty or that the loads are in fact blanks and that the barrel is empty. Three, whenever firearms are to be used on set, there is a safety briefing ahead of time to explain the protocols. We don't know if that happened. Four, he said prop guns are never pointed at anyone, be it other actors or crew. The angles are always cheated to avoid exactly what happened in New Mexico. So you would aim it a little bit off, the target, because it doesn't matter. The camera's not going to notice that. And then another thing he says is if a gun is to be fired with any kind of load, including, blanks, there's a sheet of plexiglass that is in front of the camera, and the operator and everyone around the camera wears eye and ear protection. And finally, and this is something that is inexplicable, live rounds are absolutely forbidden on set. Mm. The director said, I cannot think of a single instance where live rounds would need to be fired under any circumstances. And so when I say live rounds, we're talking about bullets. We're not talking about a live blank. We're talking about something that is a bullet. A bullet, as was said earlier, should never be on a movie set, and clearly one was here.
Let's talk a little bit about Hylena Hutchins. She was a premier cinematographer in the film industry. The American Society of Cinematographers named her one of their rising stars back in 2019. What else do we know about Hutchins?
I mean, I think we know that she was somebody who had a very bright future, and that, obviously it's always a tragedy when somebody dies like this, but she was only 42, and it's really important to note she was a woman working in a man's world. I mean, Hollywood is famously skewed toward white men, and it's really true in cinematography. So not only do you have to be good, you have to be better than your male colleagues or peers because you're going to be judged more harshly. She was somebody who had done a lot of independent film. I mean, this was probably going to be a very big break for her in terms of working with a prominent actor. She was a recent graduate of the American Film Institute here in Los Angeles. As you mentioned, American Cinematographer magazine named her one of the, rising stars a couple of years ago. So, she had a good reputation. People loved her work. She was booking a lot of jobs, and I think she had a very promising future ahead of her.
Local 44, the union that covers prop masters, said in an email to its staff on Friday that the prop master on set was not a member of the union. We received the following written statement from IATSE following our request for an interview. They say, in part, our entire alliance mourns this unspeakable loss with Hylena's family, friends, and the Rust crew. We are activating our partnerships across the industry to provide support and resources to our sisters, brothers, and kin. Creating a culture of safety requires relentless vigilance from every one of us, day in and day out. You can read the full statement on our website, the1a.org. John, This incident comes just days after IATSE ratified a new working agreement with the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, and that was done to avoid a strike. The new three-year agreement includes higher wages and daily rest periods. Do we expect the union to act following the shooting, especially since workers' safety was a huge concern leading up to this potential strike?
I mean, it's a great question. I mean, this was a very, a really dramatic negotiation. IATSE has never before called for a national strike in its 128-year history, and it had a strike authorization vote of 99% of those who voted. So the Guild was upset. They weren't just upset about working conditions. They were upset about kind of imbalance of power. They're working long hours. They have very limited turnaround times, meaning you could finish a show at 10 p.m. at night, and you would have to be back at work as early as 7 the next morning, and that involves a commute, you know, grabbing 4 or 5 hours of sleep, eating dinner, breakfast, whatever you have to do, and being back on set. So it was nearly 6 months of negotiations, and gun safety was not, you know, an issue in these negotiations, but work hours were, you know, whether or not a crew, a film would use an IATSE crew. And certainly when you hire a IATSE crew member, you expect that they have, you know, some experience. And that's the problem with non-union members. And apparently, because a lot of crew members or half a dozen crew members left this set, they were replaced by non-union people. Whether or not the gun handler was non-union, I don't know that the authorities have said that yet or not. So that is a question. But yes, the contract is up for ratification. Before the shooting, there was already questions about whether or not members would support it because they were unhappy with some terms. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's possible now that the rank and file will vote against it because they want better protection.
We'll be back with more in just a moment. A reminder, to have your questions answered on future topics or just to let us know what you think, tweet us at 1A.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Best Fiends. When it comes to match 3 style puzzle games, only one reigns supreme, Best Fiends. It's an action-packed adventure game and puzzle game rolled into one, so it's no wonder it's got so many 5-star reviews. Plus, there's new content added all the time. If you're tired of crushing the same old candy, give Best Fiends a try. You can download Best Fiends free on the App Store or Google Play Store. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to our conversation about safety on film sets with this message from Jared in Colorado.
Back in 2009, I was a production assistant for a movie called Warrior. I was the only production assistant in the locations department, and this movie was filming around the clock. I was logged in a 54-hour day at one point, and I was filming for 2 weeks straight. Sleep deprivation ended up taking its toll, and I drove myself to New York City after the movie wrapped, and I got lost. I ended up skateboarding through the Lincoln Tunnel and was arrested in the Lincoln Tunnel, and the entire thing was shut down for a day because of my sleep deprivation and just not thinking straight. It just shows the problem with sleep deprivation working in the film industry from the long hours.
Many of you have worked on crews, have described long, long days, and also the role that sleep deprivation can play in on-set safety. Mike, we're talking to you from the mountains of L.A. right before you head to another film set. What's the primary concern you hear from the crews you work with about on-set safety?
Well, I'm really going to be honest. We have not had any concerns because the way we run things. I mean, if I ever see a set getting out of control and everybody rushing around, I will lock the guns in the truck and say, whenever you guys are ready to get going again and we do this the right way and the safe way, then we'll proceed. I think that's an armorer's duty to do that because, you know, we're talking about lives here. So I think an armorer has to be able to say, hey, enough with this rushing around and this craziness. And I've done that several times on films. If the, you know, producer wants to fire me for that, so be it. I really don't care. You know, it's more important, you know, to keep people safe.
It's interesting that you talk about those cut corners, Mike. John, what are some of the reasons corners get cut on a set? Why would safety protocols be ignored? Is it a time thing, a money thing? What's going on?
both. Time is money. I mean, that is essentially the factor. Like, even before you start filming a foot of footage, or if you're shooting digitally, you know, a second of footage, you have costs in place. You have a set location that you're probably renting. You have crew that you've had to bring in. You have lighting equipment you've had to rent. You have costumes. You have crew to do hair and makeup, you know, painters, set construction. You have spent a lot of money. And if you're sitting still and not filming something, you are wasting money. So every day costs something. So there's always an incentive to get the day's work and get the shots that you need and stick to your schedule. Because if you go over by a day, that could add, depending on the size of the production, maybe $100,000. If it's a big show, maybe $1 million. I mean, so that is one of the factors. I'm going to come back to something you mentioned about sleep, because Haskell Wexler, who is a famous cinematographer, he shot One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. He made a documentary several years ago called Who Needs Sleep? And it was a documentary about film crews in Hollywood and 19-hour days, just like we heard. And it was, you know, it was started because of a cameraman named Brent Hirschman, who was working 19-hour days on the set of the movie Pleasantville. And while driving home, he swerved off the road and died in a car crash. Oh, wow. So sleep deprivation can lead to bad decision-making, but it can also really lead to, you know, accidents like that, where somebody actually just falls asleep driving home and dies.
Mike, you've expressed throughout this conversation that firearms don't need to be dangerous on set, and in most circumstances, they aren't.
Hi, my name is Jeremy, and I'm calling from Wilmington, North Carolina. We call it East Carolina and Wilmywood because we film so many movies here. I was involved in filming Swamp Thing. There was a scene with a shotgun, and that was the most weapon safety I've ever seen in a show. Everyone was invited to come in and come close to the weapon and look inside the chamber and make sure it was empty. They were just above and beyond as far as being safe.
Doug emails also, I was an actor for 25 years and a SAG member. That's the Screen Actors Guild. What was live ammunition doing on the film set, and why is nobody asking this question? Mike, why would a director ever want to use an actual bullet on set?
I've never been in an instance on a film where they've ever asked for that. Ever. So, I mean, we only have blanks. We don't stock any kind of live ammunition in our shop or in our truck or on the set, ever. It's always blanks. And the blanks are, like I said, the blanks are very clearly marked. They look very different than a bullet. And with our procedure, like I had said before, and we don't hand the gun to an AD. The guns go from us, the armorers, to the talent. There is no in-between. That way we show them exactly what's in the gun, what's being loaded into the gun, and we go over where the gun's going to be pointed during the scene and any other safety concerns that might be happening. So, again, when you set up a system like that, something can't go wrong, because there isn't ever any live ammunition on a film set.
John, California State Senator Dave Cortese said on Saturday he's planning to introduce legislation that would ban live ammunition and firearms that are capable of firing live ammunition from movie sets. How likely is it that this incident will lead to a significant change in safety operations or a shift away from ammunition altogether?
I mean, I think it's likely. I mean, but as has been said several times, there never should be live ammunition on movie set. There is a change.org petition going around right now. I think it has more than 25,000 signatures, and the people behind it are asking Baldwin to kind of lend his support, which would do that very same thing. I mean, it's basically, you know, a recommendation that live weapons, live ammunition be banned on film sets. And, you know, you mentioned briefly Brandon Lee. So in 1993, Brandon Lee, who's the son of the martial arts legend Bruce Lee, was killed when a gun that was supposed to have blanks instead had a live round chambered. Lee was 28. He was filming a movie called The Crow in Wilmington, where we just heard from, and he was killed. In a Twitter account run by Lee's sister, right after the incident happened last week, said no one should ever be killed by a gun on a film set, period. And this comes back to this question of, like, the guns, according to the affidavit, being on a cart, apparently unattended, outside, and there were three guns on it. Somebody picked up I think the assistant director picked up one of the guns. Did he pick up the right gun? Did he pick up the wrong gun? Why was there a bullet in it? Could somebody have tampered with the gun for some reason while people were away? It's just, I mean, like, as we've heard from Dahmer, you have to make sure that the gun is not only in custody of somebody who knows what they're doing, but also that it is checked and rechecked. And it sounds like both of those things, according to the investigation so far, did not happen on the set of Rust.
Do you think this could possibly reignite conversations around a strike for
I think it's possible. I mean, I do think it's possible. Again, that this wasn't an issue, you know, in the negotiations, but it's important to note that the half dozen people who walked off the set and made things, you know, as the director and the other camera assistant said, they were behind schedule, hurrying up. Those were IATSE members, and they felt that they were not getting, they weren't getting paid. That's what they said. And they were not being housed in proximity to the set, which are things that are contract negotiated, that if you are beyond a certain distance from a film set, the production has to put you up within a range, within a drivable range of that set. And then the people in the IATSE on this show said they had to drive 50 miles to set, and that is not within the range that's covered by the contract. So yes, there were apparent, again, we don't know the full story, but there were apparent violations of the IATSE contract on this show, or the show wasn't fully IATSE. But in any case, those protections are in place and are written down and codified for this reason. You don't want people taking shortcuts. And if they take shortcuts, you have to be able to say, this is wrong. I was talking with the executive director of the 600, which is the IATSE local that covers cinematographers, just after this happened on Thursday. And she said that, you know, what we negotiated for is not only for safety, but we want people to be able to say, this is dangerous and I need to speak out. Because in Hollywood, and this, you know, is something that happened with Harvey Weinstein, there's such a fear of retaliation mm-hmm. that if you're a lowly, below-the-line worker who is, like, working on props and you think something isn't safe and you say something, you not only could you be fired, but people aren't going to hire you down the line because they think you're, you know, kind of annoying and you don't, you know, fall in line. So I think part of the problem is that whistleblowers or people who feel things are unsafe are worried about job security right. and that they'll be replaced.
And to clarify, we want to reiterate that we don't know whether this was a blank or live ammunition. But quickly, Mike, how are you thinking about guns on sets and safety moving forward?
Well, I'm thinking we're just going to maintain the safety standards that we always do, and they're probably the highest in the industry.
John Horn is an arts and entertainment host with KPCC in Los Angeles, and Mike Tristano is a weapons master with more than 25 years of experience based out of L.A. Mike's behind the company, Mike Tristano & Company, Armor and Weapons Rental for motion pictures and television productions. Thanks to you both for joining us. Today's producers were Chris Remington and Arfi Getty. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jonquilin Hill. Let's talk more soon. This is 1A.